Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This week on Dr. Drew After Dark.
What if right now I pulled my fucking dick out? I don't want to do that. Why would I ever even think of doing that?
Panic disorders can be flipped into OCD.
Oh, man.
So I have some of this too, right?
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, it is fantastic.
Fantastic. Did he sell the QP? No, we just smoked it over a few months.
Sus.
The amount of... Yeah, right? Yeah.
Welcome to Dr. Drew After Dark. Please be advised that Dr. Drew After Dark may contain sexually oriented content and be unsuitable for young children.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dr. After Dark. We appreciate you all being here. 818-253-1693 for the voice messages and the emails. Got a whole stack of them at drafterdark@gmail.com. We'll try to get to those. And as I've been telling you lately, we have been taking live calls as well. So keep an eye out for the social media posts. We can tell you when you can call in and talk directly to us. Today is 2019 album Scuttlebutt on Heathen Records, Sean Patton. You can also see Number One, currently streaming on Peacock. And you're about to go out on the tour with David Cross. Welcome.
I am. Thank you for having me.
Is a national tour, or is it going to go everywhere like Segura does?
Right now, just this continent.
This continent for now.
Dipping into Canada every now and again, jumping around. But it's kind of interesting because I grew up, you know, that guy was... You know, I grew up sort of idolizing. That was like the show Mr. Show on HBO.
People forget about Mr. Show. It was a great show.
And it's funny when you watch clips of it on YouTube and people are like, so the guy from Arrested Development and Better Call Saul did a show together? And you're like, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, Bob Odenkirk was David Cross' partner. Yeah, that's how I got to know him.
But that show was like my biggest comedic influence.
Yeah.
I saw that as a teenager in real time. So... I still occasionally, when I'm around David, have to like keep it together.
Yeah, yeah. Can you still see Mr. Show on YouTube? Can people find it?
I mean, you can. You can also watch it on HBO Max.
Okay, HBO
Max. But it's just I like to I am a masochist. I like reading comments on my own YouTube clips.
Oh boy.
Because, you know, you just, every now and again, you...
Scratch that itch.
Oh, there it is. That hurts. there it is. Ah, God, that's pretty good. I'm trying to see if they get close to even what I think about myself, though. I'm like, almost. But
so you're harder on yourself than the YouTube commentators.
Oh, every performer is, you know? But you still want to see. You still want to see what's out there.
So before the mics heated up, you were complaining about people going to New Orleans for Mardi Gras. And I thought, I'll wait till the mics are on to tell them. I'm going there tomorrow.
For Mardi Gras?
I'm going tomorrow to New Orleans.
But is it your first time?
It is not my first
time. There you go. That's
My wife fucking loves Mardi Gras.
Yes.
And I am with you. It's just too gross.
It's a lot.
She goes, it's people living. They're expressing themselves. Look at these great costumes. I'm like, I just see a bunch of fucking alcoholic drunk people shitting on themselves.
Dude, it's that and then families.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no in between.
Right.
No,
so Canal Street's got all their families and Bourbon has got a bunch of maniacs.
You've got, St. Charles.
Yeah.
You got families. And, you know, people are drinking. It's the first time I ever had a beer. I was 11, Coors Light.
Mardi Gras.
You know, easy. Just grab one from your uncle's ice chest.
Yep.
He doesn't notice at a certain point. But it's that right to, you know, tits, ass, people on bourbon, pissing in the street, puking. There's no just in between where you can just like, can I just hang out?
And I don't, the flashing stuff doesn't seem to happen so much anymore. They sort of discourage that now. Is that right?
See, I haven't.
I missed that phase.
I feel like you can't fully discourage it because, you know what I mean?
It's inevitable.
Because it's going to happen.
Well, let's put it this way. Maybe they overdid it with the beads. All you got to do is wave your hand, or you get a bead.
Nowadays, now you can't be. You know, someone if they want to flash you, just if you're a man and you flash people, and they're like, "Wait, come on, where's my beads?"
Oh, right,
equality. You know, and then they throw beads at you, and you're like, "Yeah, that's the other thing too. It's beads."
They're plastic beads.
They're plastic beads.
And they hurt when they hit you in the head.
And they hurt.
Yeah.
And you're launching them at young women. I also thought it was funny growing up when you'd see just like legions of dudes like chanting And you want to be like, you guys know that the internet exists, right? You can see tits whenever you want. You don't need beads. You don't need to be in public.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess there's something
challenge.
About the live.
Man. Yeah. You know, man.
Yeah. Just, that we do.
Pushing their will on women.
I do think if you go to New Orleans for like your fifth or sixth time, Mardi Gras, yeah, definitely on the table. But your very first time, you're going to be like, man, that city's crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
In a bad way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can kind of get away from it a little bit if you kind of, again, sort of get down towards the water and stuff, but that's about it.
Go uptown. Leave the city. And most New Orleanians leave.
I bet.
You know, go to Colorado and just get drunk on
and
a
it goes on forever. And there's like four parades a day. People don't understand. It just goes and goes
and goes.
And by the way, there's one parade that is so fucking racist, I couldn't believe it.
What, Zula?
Yes. That was shocking to me. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine who's from Louisiana, he goes, you're racist. We're having fun with it. You lean into it. And I go, okay, whatever.
Yeah, I haven't done Mardi Gras in 16 years now, which is a long time. But like, from what I heard last time, it was like, no, they're only allowing black people in Zulu now.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like, okay, that's better. But yeah before, there was a time.
Yeah.
Whereas there was blackface on and you're like, ah,
yeah,
interesting.
They're going to show you the Zulu parade now. Look this up. Do you guys familiar with this in the booth? Do you know what this thing
nope.
is? Oh, no. you're gonna go, what the fuck?
Yeah. It's a...
Oh, my God.
Look at the guy in the lower left-hand corner. That's an absolute character. Everybody's dressed like that. Everybody.
Yeah, I've seen this.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
fun.
It's fun, see?
You know.
But I think there are white people in there on the DL. I don't think it's all...
All I know is they have the Zulu coconuts.
Yep.
Which are, like, basically almost gold. Like, you know, right. in basically people fight for them.
Yeah.
People trade them for money. For money. It's a coconut.
Does it go all year long, the current trading, or is it just the day of Zulu parade?
No. I think, like, if you showed up in, like, on Thanksgiving Day in New Orleans and were like, I got a Zulu coconut, there'd be people like, oh, I got how much? What do you want for it? It's, you know, people collect them.
Wow.
But, I mean, it is like, you know, it's, I feel like there's a, if there's a way to be like, this is as non-racist as you could possibly be doing something racist, that's what that parade was trying to achieve.
Yeah, yeah, I get it. That's what my friends have taught me.
It was still like,
You see it, you're like, yeah. This is okay? It's like, why is this okay?
At the same time, you're like, fuck, I don't know about it. I mean, man. You want to just kind of look the other way and be like, that's my home, but also, what the fuck? Yeah.
So how'd you get into comedy?
I just kind of started and never looked back. I was a total fuck up. I always say like 19 to 21 were just the worst years of my life, which, you know, you don't want those to be the worst years. Those are good young person years. But
you know what? I get what you're saying, but yeah. I think the lore around, you know, collegiate years and stuff is far greater than the reality.
Absolutely.
Most people are drifting, trying to figure a shit out.
Absolutely.
18 to 22.
Well, you, especially now. I mean, I feel like college
especially
kids
now
have so many expectations about what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, they're lost in their relationships and stuff. And they're fearful of dating because it might be seen as predatory. And so there's a lot of real weird stuff going on now.
I mean, I grew up in the late 90s when, like, with MTV Spring Break. Remember those years?
Oh, yes.
Those just – you probably did a couple. Yeah,
we
did
Loveline from down there.
Wait, from Panama City?
Panama City,
from
yep.
Spinnaker? No, from
at
Club
that point, at that point, they had us set up on a stage on the beach.
Wow.
And there was a huge audience on the stage with us. Can you find Loveline 1997?
Oh,
Panama Beach would be really interesting. And the guest, and put Mike Myers. The guest was Mike Myers.
Oh man,
back, right at
the height of Austin Powers fame.
No, it was before Austin Powers.
Before, okay.
And he was there to promote Austin Powers, and he lived. That's 22. Give me like Mike Myers. Yeah,
yeah.
There
wow.
you go. Let's see if it comes up. Well, let me just tell you, he came in there.
Yeah,
he came in. He's like, you know, I'm doing this new film, and it's this. He's an international man of mystery. He drives a car with the British flag, and we're like, "What the fuck are you talking about? Why is that funny?" He goes, "Well, it's funny. He's sort of a 007 character." Yeah, yeah. Where's the funny? We could not figure out what he was talking about. And he said, "No, I think it's going to be funny." He was not confident though, which was interesting.
I'm sure this will be. Yeah,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
the Canadian in him.
Yeah,
Canadian confidence just seems like unsure.
Yeah, always
it's
like
it's going to be great.
Yeah, I don't really deserve this.
Come at me, Canada. No, but the
so here are 18-22 drifting around.
No, but I'm saying like that's those years. You know, you were just I was doing nothing with life. I I was just a working 60 hours a week at a restaurant
in New Orleans,
in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Because I did the thing which I do not recommend anyone do is I followed my friends to live in a college city, but I myself was not in college.
Oof!
So I lived with college kids. I hung out at college bars, but they'd go be in college and learning and hanging out at the quad and going to study together, and I'd just be working at a restaurant. So it was miserable. It's like going to watch your friend have sex, and you're like, I'm just here too. I guess I'm having the time of my life too. You know?
Man.
It's brutal. But during those years, I always knew when I was growing up I wanted to do something, but I always thought my sense of humor was just too fucking weird.
Yeah.
And then, you know, seeing Mr. Show and then being just deciding one day I moved back to New Orleans, went to an open mic, scoped it out, and was like, all right, I think I can do this. And then went the next week and just did it. And the only thing I remember about it was being obsessed with my voice, hearing my voice amplified for the first time.
It's got to be weird.
Just a moment of like, wow, this is really happening.
Yeah.
And I just kind of, it just felt like the thing. It's the thing you were like, when you were searching for something, you're like, oh, there it is.
This is it. Yeah.
I just never had it. That's the problem with growing up in a lot of smaller southern cities, though. You're never encouraged to do much.
I also feel, you know, bad. I mean? Yes. And I also feel bad for people that don't get that moment of, oh, okay, this is it.
Sure.
Here it is.
Sure.
It's like a moment of clarity. It's like when somebody decides to get sober, it's like, okay, I got to do this. I got to stop. I got to change direction.
Where did you grow up?
In Southern California.
So Southern California, New York. You meet a lot of people out there where the world's kind of your oyster in that regard. Like, there's just like, oh, do you want to get into entertainment? Do you want to be a doctor who gives advice about, you know, sex on TV? All of these things, these can happen. There are paths. When you're growing up in like a New Orleans, and I imagine the same thing for like a Birmingham, Alabama, or even here in Austin before it was cool, you know, like when you're like, I want to do something different. It was like, nope, you're going to go to college, big state school, obviously, that's your only option. You're going to get a job, which is going to be boring, or you're going to open a restaurant, or you're going to be a rock star.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are your three options.
I feel like comedy has sort of replaced the rock star option in
these days.
Kind of way.
Yeah. These days, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
And in a way, I don't mean to disparage musicians, but I prefer it because you become sort of poet philosopher types can change things. While I feel like for the most part, if you really look at the history of music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, just some 14-year-old learned to play the guitar that was antisocial.
Yeah.
And, you know, just wanted to figure out a way to meet chicks, and that was it. And it's really all they were doing. And they became more antisocial the more successful they got.
Well, I mean, I think that's, you're starting to see that now in stand-up. Like, I think what's going on in comedy now is what happened to, and music historians are going to disagree with me on this probably, but what happened to bands in the 90s? When, like, it seems like pre-90s, the idea of, like, indie bands and things of that nature were not huge.
Mm-hmm.
You got signed to a major label or you didn't, you know? And, like, but then in the 90s, it seemed like all these, like, underground sort of, you know, cool kid at first, but like indie labels started popping up. And then there's bands that, like, you know, like a Guided by Voices, you know, they've been around since the early 90s and they're still around. Or bands like Clutch, same thing, you know, like, but they never hit this like mainstream success, but they always had this cult success. And I think you're starting to see that with stand up now, where you got people like Kyle Kinane or like a Chad Daniels, or, you know, even like a Maria Bamford, even though I know who she is and I think she's brilliant. There's still a lot of people who don't, but they kind of exist in this like cult following existence, which I think is beautiful.
Well, there's room for it, which is nice, right?
Yeah.
And before, I'm not sure those people could have kept doing it because there was no way to make a living.
No, you had to fight for the same 8 TV spots.
Yeah, yeah.
But now you're starting to see there are also those comedians who just got into it to meet girls. Who are just now getting into it to like be hot shit on Instagram, and who are just now, who you could tell are just getting on stage because they're like, this is going to make me popular and successful.
I don't expect that to last.
No, but it's cyclical. I think like every business or every art form has that.
Well, I've been saying lately though that I really feel like comedians have to save us.
We're trying.
I think we owe a debt of gratitude to Chappelle, who sort of kicked open the door a little bit.
I mean, he went, I got to go to his house in 2020.
In the Ohio?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. To, in the Yellow Springs, which is very interesting because I was in Cincinnati with two other comedians, one by the name of Cypher Sounds, former hip-hop DJ turned comedian, very funny, and another guy named Will Silvince. Both of them opened for Dave regularly.
Hmm.
And we were in Cincinnati, and we're like, hey, let's just go to Dave's. And I was like, let's just go to Dave Chappelle's house.
Did they know Dave?
They knew him.
Okay, okay.
But I was like, yeah, that's easy. Let's just
like,
go.
Like everyone does.
Yeah, yeah. Sure, let's just go to Dave's place. So you're driving through Ohio, back then especially. I saw more Confederate flags in Ohio than I ever saw growing up in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Which makes you almost want to be like, hey, Ohio, if the South ever did rise again, I don't think you're included. Just from like a geographical standpoint.
They just weren't thinking about you. Yeah. They're not considering you part of the game.
You guys are closer to Canada than you are the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah. Like you got
way closer.
But you saw I saw like Trump murals on barns and shit.
Mm.
And then you're like, man, this is bleak. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Yellow Springs. This just liberal mecca.
No kidding. It's different.
You just roll in and there's rainbow flags everywhere and Black Lives Matter flags.
By the way, that's the thing about Ohio. It is a mix, man. And it changes from one minute to the next.
Oh, yeah.
So good. So Dave's in a Clement place.
And Yellow Springs is like a beauty. It's like, it reminded me a lot of Marfa. You ever been to Marfa?
No. Is that?
Out here. It's like a very, just a little artistic Texas community out. Like, I think it's maybe 2 hours from here, an hour from here. But it's this little
There it is.
Maybe it's a little bigger. It's probably bigger than Marfa. But it's a small little town, just a little community.
That's cool.
They all know Dave.
Huh.
They all treat him like you know, he's a public figure, but they don't rush him like he's a celebrity. But he like took care of that town during the pandemic. There was 3 B&Bs. He just rented them out for the year.
Oh, my gosh.
So whenever friends were in town, he just put them in, just go to this place, go to that place. Hanging out, talking to him. Very personal.
David's a fucking saint. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. He's an interesting guy because at the same time, though, you know, he's surrounded constantly. You get to that level of success, you are surrounded by an army of people. And it almost feels like at a certain point, everything gets filtered through these people, and you're kind of like dealing. Your reality is almost affected by them.
You mean like manager types or
managers,
publicists,
tour managers, openers? You know, and like, you know what I mean. You get to a certain level, everyone's going to jump on board and be like, "Here's how you make money."
Hey, by the way, last time I saw him was in New Orleans at the Smoothie King Center,
which sounds like
a joke. There's a stadium there called the Smoothie King Center.
I just opened for Bill Burr there.
Oh yeah,
in December, 13,000 people.
I was going to say that's a great room.
That's a good big ass room. 13,000 people.
That must have been fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was actually, you hear weird things about doing stadiums, but it was a bunch of Burr fans, so they're just there for it. Yeah,
Is it a hockey rink normally or basketball?
Basketball for the Pelicans.
Oh my gosh, I forget that you guys have basketball.
Oh yeah, so do a lot of people in New Orleans from time to time.
Oh my gosh, that's hysterical.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's a great comedy venue. And I, in fact, when I went there, it was right towards the sort of the cool down phase of the pandemic. And just to see 20,000 people standing up shoulder to shoulder was such a great thing. I was so grateful for that.
Did you? So you went for when it was Tom was on the
show. Yes, Tom and Joe and Chappelle and everybody.
My dad and my brother went to that show.
Mm.
And my dad had never heard of anyone else but Chappelle, obviously. And the next time I saw him, he just quizzed me about every single one. I know a couple of the guys. I don't really know Joe, but I know Tom. And it was just a fun conversation to have with your 70-year-old dad.
How did he understand you getting into comedy? Was that a mystery to him?
Did he
grow up in Louisiana?
My dad's. My parents are both like born and bred Ninth Ward.
This must have been very mysterious to them.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because neither one of them seemed super shocked when I told them I was going to do it.
Were you the funny kid all the time?
It's funny because I was the, you know, you hear about class clown. I would never call myself the class clown. I was very introverted, but I was the skipping class to smoke weed in the woods with 5 of my friends clown.
And you'd keep those guys laughing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I would whenever I'd get in trouble, I was a dog shit kid. I was a bad teenager. It was just, I did awful shit. I stole my parents' van You know, somebody, look, my friend had to sell a QP of weed. I had to drive him to the city. No one else would, right? Did he sell the QP? No, we just smoked it over a few months. But, you know, like...
Sauce.
The amount of... Yeah, right? Yeah, right? Sound familiar?
Yeah.
The amount of, I mean, dude, the lie. I failed an entire semester of classes in high school, just straight Fs. But I forged that report card to make it look like I got C's and D's. So I didn't overshoot it. Yeah. I didn't give myself straight A's. I went C's and D's past everything. So I still got grounded.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
But a very light grounding. Like, I think it was like one weekend. So I got away with it technically and then got busted, obviously. Mm. And I remember my dad and mom being simultaneously livid that I would do that, but somewhat impressed at the work.
That you pulled it off.
And that I didn't overshoot and give myself, you know, honor roll grades. Instead was like, it was believable. Oh, shit.
It's almost like had them laughing while they were punishing you.
Oh, yeah, they were like, that's pretty smart to not. But like, yeah, when I started, I mean, I didn't
But don't ever do that again.
Don't ever do that shit again, unless it's in a movie or on stage. But
do you have siblings?
That. I got three younger siblings, yeah, and they're all very well-adjusted, awesome human beings. But so, we didn't get along until I was in my mid-20s,
obviously. And so what was making you a bad kid, do you think?
I think I didn't have an outlet. I think I had a lot going on in my head, and I had no outlet. And I also, you know, have pretty, you know, severe, I think it's severe across the board, but obsessive compulsive disorder.
Mm.
Now, over the years, you know, with therapy, it's better now. But as a kid, you know, I was struggling with that mightily. I mean, going through just like the rituals and the compulsions, and like a lot of people, you know, think it's all about, I talk about this in my special, but like a lot of people think it's all about, you know, cleanliness and fear of germs.
It can be a lot of different things. No.
And for me, it was about control. It was about preventing people from being murdered by, you know, completely made up culprits and preventing the apocalypse.
So let me explain. You know? So what the young brain would do particularly would go, if I don't skip three times over these squares and then unbutton my buttons 12 times, my family would be murdered by some guy who's out in the woods right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, my big thing, I do talk about special too, is every single night at midnight on the dot, I had to microwave nothing.
Just turn the microwave on.
Turn the microwave on for exactly 33 seconds.
And anybody that doesn't have this, they're like, well, just fucking stop it. It's
dude.
Like, they would give anything to just fucking stop
it.
You understand?
Exactly.
This is your brain doing it to you. You have no control over it.
And I had to do that because that specifically prevented the apocalypse.
And
the nuclear apocalypse.
And as you move along, you know full well it's bullshit.
Full well.
There's nothing real about it.
Fully.
And yet you still do it five times.
And the fear is, but what if I don't do it tonight and a nuclear war happens? What if thinking?
But you may have concluded that that's a zero probability, but it doesn't feel like it. You can't be reassured, even though you know intellectually it's not so. And it's very uncomfortable. And in, I don't know what kind of therapy you had, but in recent, by the way, I brought this up a number of times. There's a great website dedicated to this condition for patients. It's called the International Obsessive Compulsive Disorder Federation, the IOCDF.org. IOCDF.org. Throw it up there just so we can see.
God, I wish that existed.
Oh my God,
it's
so good with so much resources. And it is, you know, it goes through phobias and research.
Oh, this is great.
And you can get involved and you can find help. It's just tremendous stuff you can do. But it's the full, you know, OCD has a lot of stuff under that umbrella. It's hair pulling, skin picking, phobias, you know, sometimes panic and anxiety and disorders can be flipped into OCD.
Oh, man.
So I have some of this too, right?
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, it is fantastic.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, it is also like, it seems like it is something that is oftentimes a negative side effect of like a creative or a highly intelligent mind. That's a, you know, being a little, you know, but it does seem
that's
like.
That's what I say. Right. That's what that is.
Yeah. But it does seem like that. It seems
what I say is that there's nothing that humans develop that doesn't have asset as well as liability. And so from the asset standpoint, I was able to put it to great use as a physician because I double check and triple check and obsess and think about it. And, you know, I still do it to this day. I'll wake up in the morning, I'm thinking about patients I saw 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it just comes back. And then I'll go back and double check because I can't trust myself to, even though I know I checked, I'm not sure I checked.
Right.
And so that becomes great. It'd be very, very useful and you can channel it. But if you have to spend 3 hours doing rituals in the morning, I would never get to my rounds. And so that's that's when it's a liability.
Yeah.
And you know, the big advancement in OCD world is exposure therapy. So I wonder if you had some of that exposure therapy.
Now what, because
where they kind of guide you through exposure to, let's say, not microwaving. Tonight, we're going to microwave twice instead of three times. Then you're going to call me or you're going to be okay. You know, this kind of process through it.
Now, for me, it was more just talking about the root of it all. Every therapist, I saw a couple, but, you know, it was a lot of that and a lot of self-talk and a lot of, like, understanding the what-if thinking.
Yeah. Like, well, so you did sort of cognitive behavioral therapy with
yes.
that. Yeah. And CBT does work for it. And also this core therapy, too. So my main symptoms was anxiety and panic.
Same here.
Even though I had OCD, the anxiety and panic was the problematic part. And I did a lot of emotionally focused therapy for a long time. It took forever. And it was great. It was wonderful. I don't really have that anymore.
I mean, that's awesome.
But you still have the same brain, right?
Right.
And so I still have obsessive compulsive kinds of things going on all the time.
It's possible. And it's also like, because every now and again, I think I have very mild agoraphobia.
Mm. I had that bad for a while.
Yeah. So every now and again, it flares up.
Yeah.
Every now, and you just understand. That was what was so helpful for me, was just understanding, like, this is okay. It's okay to be a little freaked out. You're on the 31st floor, and that's a big skyline.
Well, but that's exposure.
Okay.
That's what exposure therapy does.
Well, then,
in other words, you end up saying to yourself, oh, I can be on that 31st floor and not have anxiety. It's possible.
Yeah, it's also possible.
Now, it might come back, but it's like right now I can do this and without anxiety. You sort of learn that you don't have to have all these sort of symptoms. And what was I going to say about the anxiety itself?
Well, also really quickly, also just saying stuff like that out loud, I will forever have the, you just said it out loud. Now it's going to happen again.
Well, what I was going to say, this is our fucked up brains. So what I do is I have blocking. I block. And so I'll be having a thought and all of a sudden I'll block and then I'll panic about not being able to retrieve it.
Mm.
And that makes it block completely.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what just happened to me just now. And as I've gotten older, when your working memory and stuff isn't as acute as it used to be, it's like, fuck.
Yeah, man. It gets in there. I mean, because you said it the best too. Like, I feel like I have more attention to detail when I write.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
And more attention to detail just when I'm like noticing, like observing life, but also if I let that swing back the other way, it becomes attention to detail to all the dark, crazy shit that you invent.
If you are comfortable, what's the craziest thinking you had?
Oh, I mean...
Because it gets crazy. It gets super crazy.
It gets super crazy.
I mean, it's comical, though.
That thing specifically, I bring up that microwaving 33 seconds thing specifically because I think that was my longest tick. I think I probably did that for like 7 years.
Yeah.
And I would do it every night, wherever I was, staying at a friend's house, in my own apartment. Because it went in my early 20s, but that was based around the idea that Jesus Christ was 33 years old when he died. So if I microwave nothing for 33 seconds, it somehow absorbed Jesus dying, absorbed all nuclear possibilities. So, it's insane.
So the a non-OCD person would go, how did you get to that?
And I think a religion, you know, I know this was always, you know, divides the room, but like, I think religion really is a really negative fuel for obsessive compulsive disorder.
Or a way of focusing it.
Sure.
Right? I'm not sure it's not going to be a symptomatic relief, but it can give you some offloading of some of it. You do, because rituals are...
Dude. And like, but you're talking about crazy shit. I mean, and there was a TV show, I can't remember what it was called, it was a British TV show that actually tackled this pretty well. But when I saw it, I was like, God damn. Like one time, there was one time when I was probably like 14, where I made a joke about my mom being attractive, and then all of
you're
the thoughts that
obsessed
flood
about it,
about like, what if today is the day I try to fuck my mom? You know what I mean? Like the amount of times I've had to combat that thought, the armada of compulsions
that's
I developed
funny,
over the years.
The dog had the same thing. He was just telling me.
Yeah.
So,
oh, really? Yeah.
I'm sorry.
oh my gosh. Yeah. But this is the thing about compulsive thoughts. They're frequently about inability to control behaviors. oftentimes it's things like, I'm afraid I'm going to throw myself off a cliff.
Oh, yeah.
Or I'm going to run this car into a thing, even though there's no way, you have zero intention to do any of it.
Zero intention.
How am I going to prevent myself from doing this thing I'm not going to do is the obsession. It's just weird.
Oh, yeah. And the amount of time, and unfortunately, I don't know what, I think this is just because it's a base primal thing, but the amount of it that goes sexual, which will fuck with your sex life ultimately, where you're like, oh my God, I really hope I don't actually start masturbating right now in front of everyone. The amount of times you're just like, what if I did that? What if right now I pulled my fucking dick out in front of all these kids?
Well,
I don't want to do that. Why would I ever even think of doing that?
So given that exposure therapy is the way to get over this, why don't we just practice a little bit right now? Just pull it out here. Let's get going. Let's just get it over with. Yeah, you'll feel much better.
But the amount of times you just like the darkest possible conclusion, your brain just immediately jumps to it.
It is weird. You know, aggressive impulses, powerful impulses, all of it get thrown into the soup here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel what you're feeling as you talk about it. It's very sort of activating, and it's very uncomfortable. It's super uncomfortable.
So uncomfortable.
I'm sorry I deal with that.
But at the same time, once I learned really what it is and what the core of it is, and you know, the key disorder. It's in the title.
Yeah.
Where you realize it's like, hey, that's all it is.
It's how my brain functions. It's a thing. So, but one of the things that I've noticed is that, did you have ADD too, do you think?
Now, I am thoroughly convinced I definitely do, but I just never got tested for it.
Yeah, it's sometimes hard to tell the difference.
Or being on the spectrum as well, sure. You know?
Yeah, that's all hard to tease out when you've got all this stuff going on.
Right.
But weed is something that young kids go for when they have these symptoms oftentimes, because they get relief from some of it, particularly ADD stuff.
Yeah.
But I've noticed, you tell me if this is true or not, the OCD stuff gets worse.
Absolutely. Yeah, so. I was just queuing that up. I was like, when I was 23, smoke weed all day and be fine. Now it's like, do I really want to deep dive into this?
Yeah. It works for a while and then way worse.
Well, it just activates everything to me. It sucks too because
it is. I would argue what I've seen is people more into the rituals, you know, like, you know, going in and out of doors multiple times and things and numbers and you know, pens and utensils and certain arrangements.
Sliding glass doors. I had to always find a way to walk through them backwards to keep the space-time continuum from fracturing.
This is important, dude, man.
Shit like that, dude. I know, you're welcome, by the way.
He kept space and time in order. We would have fractured into the many worlds otherwise.
Thank you for your help, Sean.
You're welcome.
It would have been everything, everywhere, all at once.
And this was like pre-Marvel. This was pre-like multiverse being...
How did you know about it?
So my dad was huge into Stephen Hawking.
Oh, wow.
Right?
So there you go.
Yeah. And my dad was huge into Stephen Hawking and Michael Crichton.
Oh.
So there was a lot of
good people to be involved with.
Oh, yeah. But he would, I tried to read A Brief History of Time that Stephen Hawking.
It's hard.
It's very difficult, but he would just talk about it all the time.
I've come upon Crichton again lately, old interviews and stuff, and he was sort of predicting the present moment.
Dude.
He saw a lot of the bullshit that we're into now.
I mean, people are always like, oh, like the Jurassic Park guy. You're like, yeah, I mean, that's what paid his bills.
No, he was physician. He was a philosopher. Yeah. He was a doctor, a philosopher. Yeah. He wrote, 12 books or 14 books or something?
More than that.
How many books did Michael Crichton look that up? Yeah, no, that guy, that brain was... Woo.
Is he gone?
He died,
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, okay, awful. Well. Real loss.
Yeah, but yeah, like...
Michael Crichton, how many books? Look at them all. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, right? There you go.
Who wrote The Andromeda Strain? I didn't remember that.
There's more. Show more. There you go.
How many books? Jesus Christ.
26?
Oh.
26 novels. There you go.
That's insane.
Yeah. But yeah, my dad explaining Stephen Hawking to me was just he didn't realize at the time. It was like, well, this is fuel for some ticks. Oh boy, this is fresh data.
And you say ticks. Did you have ticks when you were younger? Actual ticks? Because that sometimes starts too.
Not necessarily. It was always invented stuff. It was never like, I never had a stutter or
physical
like,
ticks or anything.
Nothing like that. But it was always just like, it was always invented things.
I'm glad you use it in the comedy because it is.
You have to talk.
Well, it's
about
also it's part of the human thing. Yeah. It's in all of us, and some of us have a lot more of it than others. It's funny as hell. It's ridiculous.
Thank you. I mean, you also. I feel like at a certain point as a comedian, you have to figure out. I don't want to say a mission statement, but like, what are you trying to actually do? Like, and if I could boil it down in one thing, I say flaw is the one thing that connects all humanity. We all are flawed in different ways.
Yes.
So if I can dig deep into my flaws and sort of expose the beauty of them, then maybe you can laugh and feel better about yours.
Yes.
That's my whole purpose on stage.
That's great. I love it because it's sort of similar to the way I think about it is that, you know, all flaws have assets.
Yeah, that's
some,
a great.
On some side, yeah. You know, so, otherwise it wouldn't evolve. It wouldn't stay in the system. They'd be evolved out.
Yeah. If we were all perfect, we'd be bored by 15.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah. I don't know that I've ever said this out loud, but
here we go.
To your point, healthy people are sort of boring. You know what I mean?
They're certainly not
entertaining.
Right.
And fucking Tolstoy said it. What's the opening line of Anna Karenina? You know, if healthy families are all healthy in the same way, but sick families are all sick in their own way.
Yeah, in their own way. Yeah.
They're all different.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'll take some calls here, speaking of.
Oh, let's do it. Yeah.
Ginger, what's up there, Ginger?
Hey, Dr. Drew. I'm a 45-year-old woman, and I was introduced to urethral sounding at age 18 with surgical steel rods.
Oh, boy.
And I've never gone past 2 or 3 millimeters.
Oof.
But I have had 2 children, and I do have some leakage, like pressure incontinence during coughing or sneezing. And I'm wondering, did I fuck up my urethra resounding, or is this just a 45-year-old mom thing?
It is very common. They're both vaginal deliveries?
One vaginal, one C-section.
Okay. Well, even a vaginal delivery is enough to cause stress urinary incontinence, and that will get worse as you get older.
Yeah.
And make sure you don't have something called...
It is getting a bit...
Go ahead.
Pardon me?
I would say make sure you don't have something called a cystocele.
I did see my doctor about it, and she did refer me to a vaginal floor, like a pelvic floor clinic.
Okay.
So I've got an appointment there in a couple of weeks. So, I mean, I've been doing my Kegels, and it's not awful, but, I mean, it's not good having to piss my pants a little bit several times.
All right, so here's the deal. Your physician is enlightened to send you to a pelvic floor physical therapist. That's great. They can do a lot more than just the Kegels, so do those exercises. You're not, Sean is looking at the sounding devices.
Wow.
He started choking there for a second. Yeah,
wow.
These metal rods that people put. Show it with a male penis if you can.
You can see it in the diagram.
Oh, there you go, that diagram there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Female, it's obviously not as big a deal.
Yeah, I know it's typically more of a male. It's more of a male kind of thing, but I was into it. And I never heard you talking about female sounding.
I'm
different dangers than the male.
I am equal opportunity in terms of my understanding of who does sounding, and I'm equally as cringy on all of it. Apologies, but for women, it's not
it's awful.
It's not as big a deal because the urethra is not as long, right? And so the thing with the males, they can get strictures and they can damage the urethra along the way, and it really is kind of not such a good thing. And you can going through the prostate can be a problem. Women, it's a much more simpler, straight shot. Is this making your orgasms more intense? Is that what's happening with that?
Yes, sir. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
Yeah. Typically, like I said, I never went bigger than 2 or 3 millimeters with a surgical steel sound.
Yeah.
And then using that with the Hitachi, that was heaven.
Oh, so you would put the Hitachi onto the sounding device?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah, the more the merrier.
Because it vibrates.
Yeah, it vibrates the metal rod in the urethra, which is the underside of the clitoris.
Okay, I'm watching this being like, what the f- Why?
I like seeing the light bulbs go off in Sean's hands. Oh, dude, thank God you didn't know about this at 18.
Oh, man.
Interesting. It's fun stuff.
So, Ginger, I tell you what you do, though, is you tell your physical therapist straightforwardly what you're doing. You're obviously not you're not making things easier on yourself by doing that, but the therapist may have ways of compensating for it so you can keep doing this thing if that's what you want to do. Okay?
Oh, that's terrific. Thanks for the advice, doctor. I appreciate it.
Do those exercises. The pelvic floor physical therapy is sort of a new thing, but it's how they treat vaginismus now and a lot of stuff.
That is straight up, you insert a rod into your urethra that vibrates and
Well, the vibrating is her little addition, but normally it's these graduated rods. But that wasn't a very complete sounding sort of. You see those kits?
Yeah. Okay.
They have lots of kits, and you get bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah. I mean, Like many things in human behavior, we were talking about how flawed humans are.
Yeah.
You know, the first person that decided to lick a frog to get high,
that
frog's eyeball, frankly, is what they have to lick. And I wonder who that guy was. Dude was that put the metal tube down his
what
penis.
What construction worker just looking at a nail going, you know what? You know what? I'll show him.
This will feel great. It's weird, right?
Yeah.
I don't get it. But in oftentimes, in my experience, people that are into this stuff are also into piercing and other kinds of stuff.
I forgot to
ask Ginger about that. But so that's interesting.
Yeah, that's something else, man.
This is a good one.
Here we go.
John is in New England. John, what's going on there, buddy?
Hey, Dr. Drew.
Hey, man.
What's going today?
We're doing great. Yeah, thank you for asking. Yeah, I didn't quite hear what you said, but I finally got it. So thank you, sir. What are you up to?
Who am I on with?
You're on with Sean Patton, comedian. And it sounds like you're from South Boston. No?
Not quite, but close.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So just Quincy.
Yeah.
So what's going on?
Oh, that's it. That was pretty good, Quincy. Yeah. I just having trouble, you know, trying to practice safe sex. Feels like, you know, it's like I get the girl, get her to like me, get in bed, and then you're like, you know, you're fumbling with the wrapper and trying to put the thing on, and it's like putting it on like a noodle that just got soaked in water.
Now, is it the sort of interruption of the whole flow? Or is it that you start to get anxious that you're going to lose your erection and then you do? Or is it all of the above?
I'd say both.
Both. So this is a pretty common thing.
I did break two condoms that I used.
Mm. You broke two condoms, is that what you said?
Yeah, like at the very end of the act, I was like, you burst right through.
Yeah, it can happen, and that's anxiety provoking too, especially if you're trying to do things safe. And
are you a hardcore? Are you a hard ejaculator?
I guess some have said that. Yeah,
and blowing the
some
latex.
Have been like, oh, you banging John? You better watch out. His fucking cock explodes. His fucking cock will explode right through you. That's me doing a Boston accent. John's got a big fucking load.
That's what it sounds like. You got me pegged.
Well, and you might, you know, the Magnum condoms Magnums are actually not bigger. They're just bigger at the tip.
Ah.
They have more stuff at the end. And so you might look at the Magnums. The actual larger condoms are the Magnum XLs. Those are the actual large ones. I don't know if you might want to try that as well, but who knows. But the point is here, what do you do if you're losing erection, either putting the condom on, with the condom on, the thought of putting the condom on? Guys freak out about the condom a lot.
Yeah.
And so what?
You gotta just practice, wear it all day.
Well, you know what? Yeah. Sean's laughing about it, but that is exactly what you need to
do. Really? Seriously?
Not all day.
Okay.
Not all day. But you need to think of all the shit you do that you practice.
Right.
Practice masturbating with a condom on. So if you're going to masturbate, get good at putting it on quickly. Put a few of them on before you do anything. Put it on, take it off, put it on, take it off, and then masturbate with it on and get used to that feeling. That's what we usually recommend for people that are having problems like this.
Oh, dude. When I was 15, I bought a box of condoms. That's exactly what I did with each and every one of them. No lie. I still think about that sometimes.
Good.
It was like an 8-pack of Trojans, and I just yoinked off to...
And it's a little more convenient.
It is. It actually isn't bad.
Everything's all contained.
So,
you got them when you need them. You got the whole pack.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, also you can start messing around with the sizes too and sort of figure out what one is most comfortable for you. That's an important part that a lot of men forget about. Being too big can slide off. Being too tight can really be constricting and hurt. So, yeah.
John needs Magnum Triple XS guy with his load.
Magnum XL just to deal with the volume.
Yeah. So. I've actually heard of this before. Like some guys, like, it's a lot. It's just like, oh, it's too much.
Too much. It's like load. A water balloon.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
Here's some emails. This person has learned from me that sperm mixes with semen in the seminal vesicles. The question is, if a man doesn't produce semen, what happens to all the sperm? It just sort of gets resorbed. You know, that's it. So people get confused. They feel as though the fluid that's coming out of their penis is coming out of their testy. It is not.
No.
No.
Okay.
The testes produce testosterone and produce the tiny little squiggly sperms that then swim up the vas deferens and get mixed in. The prostate produces the semen. The prostate produces the fluid, and the seminal vesicles kind of hold the sperm and the semen, mix them up, and that's what is initially released.
Here's where I'm going to admit to being somewhat ignorant to this.
Mm-hmm.
Semen and sperm are two different things.
Correct. Semen is just the fluid.
Wow, I thought they were just nicknames.
No, semen is the fluid, or seminal fluid. It's called seminal fluid, semen. And then the sperm is within the seminal fluid, which in seminal fluid is basically what comes out of your nose when you blow your nose.
Right.
It's the same kind of thing. Mucopolysaccharides. And your prostate is producing that stuff to propel the sperm, deal with sperm.
I'm gonna carry this information like I've always known. You know, like you didn't know sperm, semen, two different things, buddy.
Sperm is not what's coming out. The semen is the main volume that's coming out. The sperm is just sort of mixed in there from the testy, but it slowly comes up from the testy.
This makes sense because before I moved to New York, I thought the Bronx was just a nickname for Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There you go.
Same thing.
Things you learn.
Sometimes I conflate.
Isn't it interesting though how many things in life you just sort of interpret the way you've tried to figure it out when you're 17 hearing it for the first time,
and it
just stays.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Bronx is, you know, it's some way of saying Brooklyn.
It's like song lyrics where you're like, no, that's what they've always been saying.
Yeah, right. You make them up.
Try to mess around my whole Kubel act up instead of Cruel act up from House of Pain. Anyway, so.
What was that old Culture Club song? I know your minced meat. That's what I thought that was.
I know my...
Okay, my name is Keith, 33-year-old male, been on low-dose Suboxone for 9 years. I have had low testosterone for some time, been on testosterone replacement therapy. I currently take 1% gel pack, 2 packs a day. Can that affect my fertility permanently? I've never used a condom during sex. My wife still hasn't gotten pregnant. Several years ago, I told my sperm count was good but had low motility. What can you tell me about that? All right, so... the reason you have low testosterone is the Suboxone. Opioids suppress change the pituitary function, suppress testosterone production. It is is not good for you. And obviously, you're compensating for that now by taking testosterone. The problem with the amount you're taking is that if you exceed sort of physiological levels, you won't be stimulating your testes to produce sperm. You'll be suppressing the sperm production. So you're either not taking enough to be able to have optimum production, or you're taking too much and you're suppressing it. So I don't know which it is for you, but there's some reason the wife is not getting pregnant, I suspect. The point is you're on a milligram of Suboxone. Let's work on getting that off. Let's work and get rid of
that. What is that, an antidepressant?
No, it's an opioid replacement for people that have been addicted to opiates.
Oh, there you go.
Some people need to stay on it, but most people can get off. And, I don't know where you are in your recovery or what's going on, but it's not going from 1 to 0. You'll feel it. You will feel that.
There you go.
Let's see. Hysterectomy question. 31-year-old female. I want a hysterectomy because fuck having periods and I don't want kids. you're in that camp?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dad, I had a hysterectomy 2 weeks. No.
Found a doctor who would do it. The doctor said there's a chance of not having an orgasm after. So what's the question? What are the chances? I know of 2 women who've had this issue. Then I know 1 who said orgasms are better. I love my orgasms. I can have orgasm just with penetration. Not sure if that matters with the cervix since I hear they remove it during hysterectomy. I have heard of women having changes in orgasmic function, and there are a lot of nerves down there at the back of the vagina that can get disrupted. And for some women, that's an important part of their orgasmic function. So why take out part of your bodies that, you know, you're going to stop having periods anyway, right? Or maybe go on Sezonal or one of these long-term hormones that suppress your periods if that's such a problem. I don't know.
Or only sleep with guys who've had vasectomies.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you are.
Demand proof.
But she's like, fuck having periods, but that's not that big a deal, is it? I mean, we don't know. It's for us to say.
I mean, maybe the 2 guys like, it's no big deal, ladies. What do you cramp up and bleed a little bit? Come on. It's great.
Get Eat with it.
Dark chocolate. Ever heard of it?
Huh? When did you become such pussies?
Right? Yeah, right.
All right.
Good Lord.
Let's watch some videos here. Let's see what Sean has to say about some of this stuff.
Oh, what do we got?
I don't know. We'll see.
Here's some TikToks.
All right.
If they vote Trump for money again, that's the end of democracy. It won't be a free country. Let him run. He has that right under the Constitution.
Jesus Christ.
Whoa.
I mean, is he saying if we let Trump one run, it's over, or let him run because he's what's going to save the country?
Could you understand it?
I couldn't really.
Yes.
Which was it?
Yes.
Yes. Yes,
yes, we he can't. Wants all of it.
He wants him in.
Oh.
It's a little harder. I think he just wants Trump to do his thing.
Why all that facial hair? You didn't have to go all that way.
Why? Is there any diagnosis here, Drew, that you have on this?
Bell's palsy, maybe?
Look, there's obviously some dental issues. You can tell his dentition isn't what it needs to be. You're seeing the mouth doesn't move quite normally, but it almost makes me think that there was some major surgery or something done there. You know, like maybe a head and neck cancer removed or something of that nature, which if he has neck sort of deformity from that, maybe why he has all the hair over.
So I'm sort of thinking there's
some sort of surgical thing that happens here. He seems like he can express himself rationally, like he's not dumb. And so I'm guessing, you know, absent serious mental illness, that there's that hair is a strategy for covering something.
And he's on TikTok.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you want to be like, oh, this guy's just in a bunker somewhere in the middle of Ohio. Yeah, but it's he's on TikTok, though.
Everyone's got to hear from everybody.
You know, he's got an app.
And by the way, why can't we celebrate these guys as much as celebrate every other non-normative kind of person? Is his voice sound like it's been seriously messed up, too? Let's hear that again.
If they want Trump.
Yeah, a little bit.
So he's had some major surgery.
Wait, notice the left eye.
It won't be a fake eye.
You notice that?
Well, the right eye isn't blinking.
Yeah.
So he's got a palsy over
there. The Constitution.
On the right.
He's just on a hell of a DMT trip right now. I did some salvia and made some TikToks.
Oh, poor guy.
But yeah, that guy, I say let him be Trump's spokesperson.
Yeah, he could be the press secretary.
Exactly. Like this is yeah,
that'd be
sign
impressive.
Yeah.
If you put the press off a little bit, they wouldn't be so aggressive. I love the strategy. So, all right, TikToks make me sad. I get sad when I watch TikToks. I feel sad for this guy. All right, give me another. Make me sad again.
Yeah, let's see what, because they're all sad a little bit. Ugh.
See?
I mean, if I'm a woman, I'm just creaming my pants right now.
You want that, right? You need that.
Because I'm like, oh, this is Dr. Cunnilingus right here.
Or but back to OCD, do you think it could be some sort of ritual, some weird OCD?
I mean, as you were saying that, I was like, you know what? I didn't go through the hard times with access to social media. You know what I mean? Like, this could be a guy's thing. Like, I've got to eat out TikTok.
Yes, I've got to do. There's words he's trying to say there, right?
Wait, can we see it again?
Let's do it again. Saying fallopian tube.
Maybe saying I love you.
Fallopian tube.
Oh, was this like double talk?
Is this sort of like an ASMR thing maybe? Does he think he's doing that?
I mean, the kind of ASMR that keeps you awake and gives you anxiety? okay.
Do you like ASMR?
I haven't really experimented with much.
I wonder, because I understand its soothing nature. It's way over the top for me, but I kind of get it.
Right. And I wonder if
that's our OCD thing that people with OCD like. I don't know.
This one is one that like would, if you were just walking down the street or like you walked into a room and a guy was just doing that in a chair by himself, like, I'm going to leave this room.
You'd get away. You'd move away.
But at the same time, it's very interesting. The idea of like, oh, I've got to post something insane once a day and just deal with the repercussions because that keeps the killer bees away. You know, so this guy might be sparing us from
back to the space time continuum, maybe saving the world.
This guy might be preventing the next pandemic. We don't know.
Sean is bringing up an interesting point, which is that I think we forget that a cool guy out in the wild, you would pull away from.
Cool guys,
you would not go lean into and laugh at or feel sad about. You would move away.
Kind of move away from the screen here when I watch them too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about our.
That. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking about, that was a pretty cool guy. I thought he was great, but I think, if he were out in the street screaming that shit, I'd kind of move away.
Yeah. I'd cross the street a little bit. Yeah.
All right. More?
Yeah. Uh-oh. Here we go.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, that's his foot.
He's peeling the skin and the toenails off with his mouth. Yeah, he looks like a regular dude. He's got like a cardigan sweater on and stuff. Dude.
Yeah, and it looks like it's at the airport. Yeah. Which, as you know, brings out the best in humanity.
But you know what? See it again, because it feels like it might not be an American airport, right? Like, this looks like it's...
Or maybe it's not an airport. Maybe it's...
What is that? Oh, see, they're speaking a different language.
Yeah. it's a country where you pay for travel in toenails.
I like the way he's like, hey, caught me. Like a beginning of the sitcom right there.
You caught me. Shoe off, sock off, toes in my mouth.
Cue the theme song.
Oh, God. I never understood. Now, I have never experienced, and I fly a lot. Mm. I've never experienced the foot off people, I mean, or the shoe off people.
Like in on the plane, they put their feet up on the back.
I feel like the internet got to them fast enough, and now it's like, don't even try it.
You know, I had an experience on a plane. It's a little bit different, but it bothers me to this day. I was on a Southwest flight, three things across, and my knees were against the seat in front of me, right?
Yeah.
Right.
You're a tall man.
There's no way to avoid it. My knees are against the seat. When I would shift around, it would move a little bit, but I was aware my knees were at the seat, but I didn't I wasn't aware to the point where I was thinking like, this is probably driving into this guy's back and I feel bad about this. Dude threw a fit in front of me.
Really?
Threw a fit. Like, I was intentionally kicking him in the back or something.
Did it get, while the flight was in the air?
It was towards the end of the flight.
Okay, yeah.
And it was like, Jesus. At first I thought, be one thing to say, hey, I don't know if you're aware, but that is really getting me.
Yeah.
As opposed to, what the fuck are you doing, asshole? It's like, what the flight, people flying, it is crazy.
Life has been putting its knees into that guy's back for a long time, it sounds like. You know what I mean? Like, it sounds like that.
He didn't behave like me. He behaved like more really super narcissistic guy. Like, he his shit did not stink.
I mean, you notice too, like this happened this morning. I flew here this morning from New York. JFK lines are insanely long, and the whole I'm TSA pre, I'm all this shit.
Is this JetBlue?
No, this is Delta, but it was still just long. And there's a guy behind me as we're both waiting to check our bags, and the whole time he's just being like, God damn it.
Oh,
this is ridiculous. And something about him doing that made me less angry at the situation. I was
that's good.
But I'm not being this guy right now.
Well, at least you see
the
stupidity of being like that.
Right. Right. And there's something about, we all have those moments where you want to be like, motherfucker, I will end you. Why? But there's something about catching yourself and going, or if I turn around and go, hey, man, by the way, what? Dr. Drew, hey, your knees are in my back, buddy.
Yeah.
And also, I've got one testicle that's bigger than the other. You know what I mean? Like,
I can help with that.
Right?
You never know.
Right? Instead of just like, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
When we land, I'm going to fucking remove those glasses and shove them up your ass, did he say something like that?
It felt like that.
Yeah.
It was just so odd. It just like, sorry.
But you know what?
But then they don't accept the apology then either. It's like, oh, I had no idea. I'm sorry. It's like, yeah, you knew. It's like, oh, now you're a narcissist. Now that's grandiose narcissism.
That guy right now is in court, trying to get custody of kids again. You know, people like that always have like, oh no, there's a lot more going on.
Oh yes, for sure.
I know, because I've been there, because I used to, you know, I went to therapy for OCD, but I also had like
the aggression.
Explosive aggression issues.
Now that doesn't necessarily get better with the therapy. How did you get through that? Do you think things through now? You take a beat?
Think things through, but also put yourself in their shoes.
You have empathy.
Big time.
Yeah.
It's one of my biggest OCD triggers was like, so I'm a sociopath. Good Lord, I hope I don't murder my little brother right now for no reason.
Because you had trouble with empathy.
Right, right, right. No, because I was worried that I didn't have empathy.
Right, right. But the reason you didn't was you were so in your head with the obsessions, you couldn't get to empathy.
But I'm a total, I'm an empath.
Yeah,
totally.
You seem like you're pretty connected.
But just like you put yourself in their shoes for a second, you go, oh man, that guy's, like the guy behind me today, I'm like, this guy's life probably sucks right now.
Yes.
And we all go through those waves.
It's really very important. These are, like you said, comedy can make a difference. What was your mission call again?
Expose the beauty of human flaws.
The beauty of flaws. But also in there is also other sorts of richness.
Oh,
Which is, we all are in this together. That flawed person is experiencing something. Oh, yeah.
And not being able to process that properly. There was times where the amount of times I've been sitting next to a friend in a car and I'm like, man, I'm afraid of I hope I don't pull out that cigarette lighter and burn his eye for no reason. You know, or like the amount of times just like holding something sharp and I'm like, I hope I don't stab everyone around me. But it was never a fear of hurting oneself.
When I had
there was always other people.
When I had bad panic and anxiety and I was having a bunch of obsessional thoughts, mine was towards self. I was going to throw myself off a cliff or something. Or
see, that was it. Was never. It was never. I could.
Oh,
I
maybe would, you are a sociopath. No,
I would, no. That's the thing. I would try and make it about me, though. I would try and be like, "No, you're going to stab yourself. Obviously, not all these random old ladies." But you realize that's because you know you're projecting your own
stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But no. Nah, I mean, that like guy like. I mean, wait, what brought us on? Oh, the guy in your back. You're talking about, bring to the guy with the feet.
Yeah.
All right. But a guy like that, I would see a dude like that in public and be like, my initial reaction would be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But nowadays, I would almost want to sit down next to him and be like, I want to know why.
That's my thing. I feel like,
are you all right?
Yeah, are you okay? We did catch you, and you seem a little ashamed, but that seems kind of appropriate.
Yeah.
What do you think people wouldn't see? How did that work?
Or do you got a toe curious. Thing? You know?
I'm kind of curious. Yeah. Too. Like, what through your mind?
Yell at me. I know you're gonna, but now let's discuss.
Do we have one more video maybe? Is that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. I got another.
So one of the pros about being in an open relationship is it removes the pressure to always have to do everything together. Okay. My husband and I have been non-monogamous for 12 years, and I've always been a little bit of an adrenaline junkie. And my husband's not. I've had times where I date someone who loves hiking and loves skiing and loves kite surfing. And we get to have those dates where we go skiing all day and then go out to a really good dinner and then hang out in the hot tub and fool around afterwards. And would I love to have that experience with my husband? Yes, but he doesn't enjoy the skiing aspect. And so if he did it for me because I love it, I would at the same time have this sense of kind of guilt that he's just not enjoying it that much and he's only doing it because he feels like he has to. And then that makes the experience a little bit less enjoyable for me. And I find it funny that I am filming this video while I am totally on an adrenaline high after getting to ski by myself for the past hour.
And here's the thing about healthy relationships. You don't explain them like this. In my head, I was going to tell you how it works. This and then that. And then that's all rationalization. That's all rationalization. 100%. And this, honey, you're not that into your husband. I get it. That's okay.
Yeah.
You can decide to stay with it or not.
I thought the end of that was going to be like, I'm so crazy that I'm filming this after just being railed by like three guys on this mountainside.
I know.
It was insane. I come up here to get railed by these snowboarders.
And if that's what she wants to go do, be good. Go do it. Be you. But to sort of rationalize that God knows what the husband is doing right now. I know.
What if he's like working 60 hours a week so she could?
Well, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem fair.
Well, so until she said fool around, I was like, wait, do you not have friends you could just go hiking with?
Right.
She's
well, the adrenaline junkie is just code for alcoholic, okay? That's code for that. or addict, whatever.
Yeah.
And although she may not have fully manifested that yet, that's what that is genetically. It's sort of why people need that level of arousal in order to feel okay and sort of be sort of satisfied in some way.
Typical redheads. Not kidding.
And if she didn't do that when she was younger and she needed to, I could see where there would be kind of a deficit. But for Christ's sake, they don't have kids. They would no way she could do all that with kids. So whatever.
Also, don't you feel like the idea of monogamy or just being in a monogamous relationship, it feels like it's like a goal that you're set, that everyone is set on that path by society when it really shouldn't be. Like, you know?
Well, it's not set by society. It's something that, first of all, you need to do to raise kids successfully.
Right, if you want to have kids, right.
And there is a richness in it that you can't find anywhere else.
Sure.
And particularly, people don't expect to get older.
Right.
And it's particularly when you get older, you're, and by the way, there's a whole thing about building a life together, building a business together, building a house together, building a family together. That's something you share together. And if you dissolve the marriage or diminish the marriage, that all kind of goes away. You don't get that.
True.
So no, you shouldn't have to be a monogamist. She should go do whatever the fuck she wants.
Yeah.
But don't diminish monogamy because it's not right for you. Certainly not right now. It's all okay for everybody. But to try to force this sort of, and by the way, there's a place where you can just go, hey, look, we share a marriage and a life and a family together, and untangling this would be too much, but I'm just not into this relationship right now. I need to go out. You could agree to do that and keep a marriage going. It's fine. But you need to be much more honest about what you're doing.
Well, yeah.
That's the part that bothers me. Not rationalize what you're doing. Be honest about what you're doing, which is you want to fuck a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
You want to go do all these things your husband would like to do. Yeah. You're not that into your husband right now. okay, be honest about it. Figure out how to work that out, the two of you.
You want a guy to bungee jump his balls into your mouth? But like also...
as Sean often does.
Put it... And also, yes. But also like putting it online. That's a thing that
well, but this is
highly
the thing about
bothers me
this,
about social media.
I completely with you on that. All these videos we've been watching are sort of disturbing in the same way. But this justifying to the world, that's not what healthy people do. Whereas you and I were talking about how... You know, healthy families are all healthy the same way.
Right.
They don't talk about it. They don't broadcast it. When you're busy having to justify yourself, you will also want to justify to other people. And that's not society doing anything. That's you doing that. So there's way too much in this world right now. Like, we shouldn't have to in society. Blah, 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 blah. Don't. Be honest, though. Be honest.
Be just honest. Be you.
Be you. That's exactly right. John, it's been a pleasure.
The
thank
pleasure
you for,
is actually,
thank you for
I mean, this is amazing for me, so thank you.
Well, good, and thank you for sharing this thing, and I'm glad it's a psychopathology that we both share, which is nice.
We share,
And that you're better, and you're in a living proof, an example that this stuff can be an asset. It's not that big a deal. It can be very unpleasant when you're an adolescent, but... But these days, for God's sakes, there's websites and things like IOCDF.org and these things. And above all else, we're flawed and we're funny.
Exactly.
That's the thing about humans.
It's
we
the beauty
are
of it
fucking
all.
Funny. That's why I lurk with drug addicts. They're funny as hell. Even that chick, if the door were shut and we were working, you know, stuff, I'm sure she's funny as hell. I'm sure there's a lot of funny stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And that's part of that flawedness that we have as humans. So thank you so much, Sherry. You want to tell people where they can find you?
Oh, follow me. Also, Instagram mainly, at Mr. Sean Patton. But I'm also on TikTok, Sean Patton Comedian. My website, meseanpatton.com. I try to get them all as one thing. They're all different. But yeah, check out this. I'm on tour. Check out the special on Peacock. And there's another one coming at the end of the year. And, I'm out there. I'm doing it.
Find Sean there. See you all next time.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation of the Dr. Drew After Dark podcast or interaction on the Dr. Drew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or physician medical advice or direction per se. You must always follow your medical professional's advice and direction. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Please understand, I am not playing the role of physician in this environment per se. I'm educating. I am a licensed physician with specialty boards in American Board of Internal Medicine and American Board of Addiction Medicine.